Welcome to this edition of Making It Happen in the Greater Manchester Region. These segments are brought to our listeners through a collaborative partnership with Manchester Access Channel and 95.3 FM Radio, and Making It Happen, a regional coalition focused on creating a coordinated response among individuals, organizations, businesses, and communities to promote behaviors that measurably improve overall health and well-being of our youth, families, and communities. Our work is rooted in the core belief that behavioral health is essential, prevention works, treatment is effective, and people recover. The Greater Manchester region includes the communities of Auburn, Bedford, Candia, Deerfield, Goffstown, Hooksett, Manchester, and New Boston. Today, we are welcoming our guest, Lori Warnock, and we are talking about over-the-counter, under-the-radar, the kinds of substances that our young people may get into in our own homes that may be unsafe for them, and what we can do to keep them safe.
Hi. That's right. Absolutely.
So, Lori, could you tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from, and why you know everything about this?
I'm the education coordinator for New Hampshire for the Northern New England Poison Center. And the Poison Center, as you may know, is located at Maine Medical in Portland, and it covers Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont. I'm the only employee here in New Hampshire, so I am known as the face of poison in New Hampshire, which, frankly, is perfect for radio. My job is to travel across the state from Salem to Colebrook doing poison prevention programming. And the topics vary. When I'm talking with older adults about medication safety, sometimes I'm talking to young parents about medication safety with their little ones. For the past couple years, it's been a lot about opioids and fentanyl, because certainly that's been a big concern in our area. And most recently, it's been a lot about electronic cigarettes, juuling or vaping. There are so many products in the home and in our everyday environment that teens and adolescents can take advantage of in ways that would be unhealthy. So I try to do a prevention program for parents that's sort of general, talking about things like aerosols in the home that can be used as an inhalant, or caffeine products, which are so prevalent. We try to parse through what parents might do to just sort of be vigilant about substances in the home and in their everyday environment.
Great. So we had, talked a lot about with our stakeholders and our partner provider organizations across prevention, intervention, treatment, and recovery. And one of the things that really came up too is that the community was hungry for knowledge around how they could be a part of the solution. So we keep hearing about the opioid crisis or opioid epidemic and all of that. We know addiction is nothing new in the state of New Hampshire, and that opioids and fentanyl are killing people rapidly, as you mentioned earlier. But we also know that there are many sort of upstream kinds of things we could be doing around prevention to make sure that at a very young age we build resiliency with youth, which we've talked about in several of our other sessions, and then also that we're looking out for harmful substances that young people might get into. And sometimes by accident, we may call the Poison Control Center because of some, an accidental ingestion of a substance within the home. And other times, as you mentioned, that adolescents may be experimenting with something around their house as well. And there are lots of unhealthy sort of substances that we may have access to. So if you could talk, as part of the series, it really was about how do we have a general, as a community, how do we have some general knowledge about, the substances that may cause harm, mm-hmm. and how do we work to keep our community members safe? So our own families, that kind of thing.
Sure. So one of the things that we find is particularly effective way to safeguard your home is to dispose of unwanted medications, for example. We find through research that the place where kids tend to get illicit medications or prescription medications is not buying them from some stranger on the street. It's finding them in their own medicine cabinets, in the medicine cabinets of friends and other adults, older relatives, for example. And so the more that you can do to limit the number and the quantity of unnecessary medications in your home, the better off you are, because then they're not available for misuse. And that means disposing of unwanted meds through a variety of ways. October and April have National Take Back Days, where you can go to your local police department and dispose of meds. Many police departments now have permanent drop boxes. City of Manchester, in fact, their police department has a permanent drop box where you can drop off prescription medications at any time. Mm-hmm. and they'll just be destroyed appropriately. Even making sure that you're buying single symptom type cold medications, because cold medications, unfortunately, cough medicines in particular, are a substance that teens have learned to misuse. So buying cough medicine or cold medicine that is specific for pain, for example, versus sore throat versus cough, not the combination things that are nighttime sleep and pain and cough medicine all combined. Those are really a dangerous product to have in the house, because kids will mix them with soda and make a cocktail out of them. And, you know, if you've had, if you've ever given your kids something like Benadryl, some kids get sleepy, some kids get sort of wired from it. And so depending on your child's response, that can be kind of dangerous. Cleaning products. You know, we always talk about cleaning products with respect to young children, and we know that they can be dangerous, so they have to be kept up and away and out of reach. But even with older kids, things like Dustoff, the spray stuff that you spray on your keyboard, because it has a propellant, it's a product that can be misused for as an inhalant. And so if you find that your teen has gone through four cans of Dustoff and their keyboard is still filthy, you need to sort of be thinking perhaps it's being misused. Some of the middle schools have prohibited aerosol personal care products. If we thought that 14-year-old boys were using Axe body spray for personal hygiene, that would be great. But unfortunately, many of them are using it as an inhalant instead. So
you've talked a little bit about some of our everyday household products that could be dangerous if misused. And there are other products I know that are sort of advertised as energy boosters. Could you talk a little bit about how those may be misused by teens as well?
Absolutely, yes. We find the energy market is huge. And whether it's Monster drinks or just your extra pump of caramel, medium salted caramel swirl coffee with an extra shot. Any product that's labeled energy is likely to have caffeine in it. Caffeine, we know, is a stimulant. And it appears in unlikely places. So in the squeeze bottle of Mio that you give your kids to flavor their water bottle, Mio Energy has caffeine in it. Any product labeled energy is likely to have caffeine and sugar. Whether it's 5-hour energy drinks that the kids suck down like a quick shot. If you think as an adult, if you've got a large coffee, you nurse it over, say, a half-hour period of time with an adult metabolism. Those 5-hour energy shots, when you take a 15-year-old's metabolism and you throw back 206 milligrams of caffeine in a 5-minute period, that's likely to create some kind of behavioral disturbances, and that's not something that the average teacher needs to deal with in a classroom. It also makes it difficult for kids to concentrate, but those products are everywhere, whether it's the 5-hour energy drinks or we're talking about things like Monster energy drinks, mm-hmm. the tall soda type products that are infused with caffeine. And it can create that sort of nauseous feeling, that racing pulse, a bit of a headache. It's especially for a child that may be already on medication for ADHD or something like that, it's just an additional complicating substance that they just don't need. So being vigilant when you're buying any product that's labeled energy as to the sort of cumulative amount of caffeine that your kid may be taking in.
This is great. So we're going to be covering sort of a lot of different topics throughout this, because I think what's important is that many of our previous sessions have highlighted illicit drug use. And what I'd like to make sure that we cover with you are the things that we have very easy access to, hence that, you know, sort of over-the-counter type title. So another piece that we're hearing a lot about that I'd love for you to be able to speak to are just the changes in the availability around medical cannabis and cannabis-infused edible products and those that can look appealing to young people and things like that, and how we keep young people safe. Can you speak a little to that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So our conversation about cannabis, about marijuana use, has obviously changed. And where we used to talk about it as a strictly illicit substance that, you know, testing positive for could get you fired from your job, etc., we now talk about it as a medical substance, as a medical treatment product. And that lowers the perception of risk for kids. And we know that when the perception of risk drops, usage increases because it doesn't seem like a dangerous substance. And we've seen that data verify exactly that sort of trend. What we find with cannabis products now, or cannabis-infused products, as edibles are often referred to, that they look very similar to their non-cannabis doppelgangers. And unfortunately, unless they're treated like other medicines and therefore stored up and away and out of sight, they are a risk, especially for small children who would not know that they were anything other than cookies or brownies or candies. Fortunately, they are not particularly toxic, but they will create a pretty unpleasant situation for a small child. I mean, we always worry about things like respiratory difficulty, and certainly if a child has any other complicating medical situations, then a cannabis-infused edible product would be more dangerous for them. Generally speaking, they are not particularly toxic. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't have an effect. They will. So if you're taking a medically infused, a medical marijuana product like a cannabis-infused food item, make sure that you're storing it in the same way that you would store your other medicines, up and away. The other problem that we see is that people are not using them as directed, and that means that a cookie, for example, might have instructions that say, eat one quarter, then wait half an hour until it takes effect. Obviously, digesting something with cannabis is different than inhaling something with cannabis, so it takes longer to take effect. And what we find is that people using the edible products don't wait that period. They take an additional bite. I can sympathize. I would have a hard time eating a quarter of a cookie and then putting it aside for half an hour. So it's very tempting to just polish off that cookie. But unfortunately, especially for a naive user, that can mean that they have a sudden surge of the product, and it can be, again, unpleasant. Mm-hmm. Not likely dangerous, but unpleasant. So when you're using these cannabis products, you have to sort of pace yourself and see how they learn slowly how they take effect and follow the instructions. All of them are segmented in a way that you can determine a dose. That's part of the requirements for both the packaging and the processing. But you've got to follow the directions. You've got to take it low and slow is the rule.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've sort of already covered, you know, everyday household products that could be dangerous if misused. We've covered energy drinks. We've covered aerosol, you know, all these different kinds of products, the cough and cold products, as well as, you know, touched on how we are able to safely dispose of prescription products that are unused or expired. And we've also talked a little bit about cannabis-infused edible products. So lots of different things going on here. I would like to make sure that we also cover a really hot topic, as you talked about earlier, that there's been a lot of conversations around e-cigarettes. There's been quite a bit of marketing as e-cigarettes as safer than cigarettes, and that they're a way or a product to help people quit smoking. And I think that some of that, as you spoke about earlier around the perception of harm when you were just talking about marijuana and how our conversation has changed around medical marijuana, and it decreases that perception of harm for young people when they see it as not, you know, an illegal substance, but as, and it's one of the reasons that prescription medications can be quite dangerous to kids too. They often aren't thinking of it as harmful as an illicit drug. So there's some concerns there around electronic cigarettes as well. Could you talk a little bit about what we know about what's contained in the ingredients of that liquid and sort of how it impacts our body or where we stand on that science?
Sure. Electronic cigarettes really came into the market around 2010, and the idea was that they would be a cessation product, a tool to help people quit smoking as a way to address their nicotine addiction without all of the harmful components of combustion cigarettes. What we have found in the research that is available is that for people who are traditional smokers, they may be a less harmful, and not safer, but less harmful product because they don't contain all of those substances. We don't see a lot of evidence that it means that people are reducing their nicotine consumption. However, what we're finding is that people who smoke traditional cigarettes at home may use an e-cigarette at work, because it allows them to satisfy their craving without having to go stand out in the snow on their smoking break. They can actually use it more often in the workplace than they could when they were using traditional cigarettes. So rather than reducing their nicotine consumption, they're just supplementing it. That's adults who already have a nicotine addiction. The problem that we see most profoundly, and that I have been speaking at schools all over the state of New Hampshire and to parent groups, is the nearly 2 million adolescents who did not have a smoking habit who have taken up using electronic cigarettes. And particularly introduction of one product called the Juul, which is a very discreet, easy to sort of hide product. It's very slender, looks a lot like a flash drive or a thumb drive. And it became so popular that the juuling became the term for utilizing e-cigarettes or for vaping. And that becomes a problem as well, because when we ask students in surveys, for example, do you use electronic cigarettes? They say, no, I juul. So we've actually had to change the terms that we use in surveying students to get an accurate picture of how many are using it. We've identified a common misperception that they don't contain any nicotine, that they only contain flavored liquid, which is not true. Many of the products do not even come in a zero nicotine version. And in fact, Juul has a very high concentration compared to other products. So,
Juul is not, sorry to interrupt, it's not one of those ones that you can taper down, right? The Juul is actually just a set amount of nicotine.
That's right. It's a pod.
Does that one have a zero nicotine option?
No. Okay. So the pod that comes, the non-refillable pod that actually contains the juice for Juul, is 50 milligrams per milliliter. Now, when you go into a smoke shop or a vape shop, you'll find a whole range of concentrations. The highest is usually in the 36 or 24 milligrams per milliliter. So if you're starting off with Juul using their product, their concentration is extremely high, and their stated purpose was to be a replacement product for people who were already smokers. So they meant to be very satisfying to someone with a strong nicotine addiction. Unfortunately, their product has become the product among adolescents. So they're starting off with a very high product, and we know that adolescent brains react differently to nicotine, so they become addicted to nicotine faster than adult brains, and it has permanent long-term effects on how their brain responds to other addictive substances. So not only is it dangerous for them to start with, but because their brains are still evolving, it has long-term consequences and makes them more susceptible to other addictions later in life. Not what we need.
That's exactly why I was asking about that product in particular, is that we know that it has become the most popular, e-cigarette out there. And then there are lots of devices that people, once they get pretty into e-cigarettes, it's almost has its own culture around the type of products that you can buy and the different, components, and that you can modify some of these and all of that. So I know there are a whole world of sort of YouTube videos out there around modifications for your vaping device and all of that. So, but because many young people are starting with that Juul and it doesn't have that zero nicotine availability, and it doesn't even have lower doses of availability, that seems particularly concerning to me. That's something that kind of stands out to me, because, as you mentioned, then it's leading into nicotine addiction.
Right. It's as though you were starting your alcohol drinking future with tequila as opposed to a wine cooler. I mean, it's just that kind of potency, the difference in potency. Juul did just introduce a 30 milligram per milliliter product. So that's their low product, and that's still higher than most of the juices that you find in vape shops. The other part of that that's been troubling is that Juul spent very little on traditional marketing. Not the kind of print ads, et cetera, that we see in traditional smoking products. They focused on social media, using hashtags like Do It For Juul. So teens would take videos of themselves vaping and would post it on YouTube or on their Instagram feed or whatever. And that created its own marketing among a population that really was at high risk and where parents are not, where there's not a lot of adult supervision. The FDA has recently cracked down on Juul and is investigating their marketing practices. We know that long time ago, the tobacco companies identified if they can get someone hooked on nicotine in their teens, 13 or 14, they will have a lifetime smoker, because cigarette smoking has a very high risk of relapse. Anyone that's ever been a cigarette smoker knows. On average, it takes 8 to 10 tries before someone can effectively quit smoking. Now, that's when we're talking about adults. When we're talking about teens, they're not even, they don't have access to some of the tools that we've used as adults, like gum and patches and medications, in order to facilitate quitting smoking, because those products are all meant for individuals over 18. Mm-hmm. And while there may be the average, you know, a 16 or 17 year old who is the size of, say, an adult, you've also got these little 14 year old kids who haven't had their growth spurt yet that would certainly not be appropriate for that kind of product. They're going to have to rely on other behavior modification strategies in order to quit smoking, and it's going to be that much harder. We look at vaping as a fad. It's absolutely a social construct. It's a fad, similar to things like finger spinners and bottle flipping, etc. And I really think eventually it's going to fade. Yeah, you vape, big deal. Unfortunately, it's a fad with an addictive component. So even when the fad fades, the addiction's going to remain, and we are going to have to deal with a cohort of young adults and adolescents who have a nicotine addiction, and we will need to treat them as individuals with a chronic recurring disease.
Mm-hmm. So you've given us so much information today, and I really appreciate that. I also would like to make sure that we kind of leave people with some information about where they could find out more around any of these harmful products, specifically around e-cigarettes, as well as where they might be able to seek help for a young person that they're worried about.
Absolutely. And there are some great resources out there. So if you go to the drugfreenh.org website, there are some great tips for talking to your children at every age about substances, and whether that's elementary school kids or high school or college age students. You can go to the quitnownh.org, which is the tobacco cessation programs website from the Department of Health and Human Services here in New Hampshire. You can go to stillblowingsmoke.org, which is a great sort of peer-to-peer website. And Breathe New Hampshire has some great information on how to address smoking nicotine addiction and ways to help. The Drug Free NH website has information on lots of different substances in addition to vaping. And certainly there are the prevention agencies like Making It Happen that are going out there and doing the grassroots work, particularly in training peer educators, because we know that adolescents listen to other adolescents way more than they listen to somebody's mom yapping at them. So the more we can do in creating peer educators who can go out and speak knowledgeably and also effectively to the other students, we know that that's really the most effective way of getting the messaging across.
And we do have a large cohort of the near-peer, the peer-to-peer trainers here in the Manchester area. For more information on Making It Happen, you can visit our website at makingithappen.org, and you could learn about how a young person could get involved in that near-peer training, or how you could bring that training to your own school or facility as well to have a peer-to-peer conversation around all of this information. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lori. I really appreciate it. And thanks to our listeners throughout the greater Manchester region. With your support, we're all working to inform, engage, and work together to build healthy, thriving communities. So thanks for listening.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.